At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Some things in an economy take years to change, others mere months. Wither the R word on the program today from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday today, the 7th day of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin today with a word we were hearing a lot of, say, 5, maybe 6 months ago. Now, not so much.
Recession.
The recession warning signal.
This economy goes into a recession.
Odds of a recession.
Back in August, when recession prognostications were all the rage, we got Neil Irwin from the New York Times on the phone to chat. So, Neil, listen, let me start with a question that I get all the time. I'm sure you do, too. When's the recession going to start?
Maybe never. Maybe we're already in one. That's the thing about recessions. You know, you don't know in real time with any great certainty that you're in a recession.
So that was August. We called Neil back this morning with recession prognostications now very much faded to ask what's changed.
So the biggest single trigger to that entire flurry of recession fears was what's called an inverted yield curve.
We've talked about this before, you and I, the idea that longer-term bond yields, interest rates, had fallen below short-term interest rates. That's called an inverted yield curve. And the important thing is that for a lot of economy watchers, a lot of them, by which I mean almost all of them, and a yield curve inversion means a recession is coming eventually. So that's item one. Item two, Neil reminded us this morning, was the actual economic news back then.
We had a global manufacturing slowdown. We had the trade wars were escalating. We had Brexit hanging over everything. And so you had this world where it looked like the world economy might be slipping into recession, and that seemed to be what financial markets were signaling.
Hence, recession. That word. Now, though, not August, but November?
So it looks like we dodged a bullet. It looks like that did not materialize. We do not seem to be in recession. The U.S. economy seems to be growing at a nice, steady rate.
Yes, sure, there are some problems.
And the factory sector in the U.S. really did enter contraction. It may still be there.
But
manufacturing is a small piece of the overall economy, only about 12% of total employment. So if we focus too much on what's happening in manufacturing and don't realize that, you know, the service economy is chugging along pretty well.
Also chugging along the American labor market. Job growth is mostly steady. Consumers are still spending. And oh, yeah, a guy by the name of Jay Powell and his merry band at the Federal Reserve.
I do think it's an interaction between monetary policy and trade policy.
That's Tara Sinclair. She's at George Washington University.
There's this sense that with lower interest rates from the Fed, there might be more room for the economy to accommodate the trade policy and the trade war.
And the economic stresses the trade war has brought. To be fair, there is news a trade deal could be on the horizon, maybe.
I don't mean to be flippant about it, but it is true that, you know, I haven't checked Twitter in the last 5 minutes, and therefore I might not know what's going to happen next with trade policy.
Which is fair. Recession's not the word of the economic moment anymore because the economy is chugging along, just not as fast as it had been. Tara Sinclair, one more time.
the numbers that we're seeing, they do look like a slowdown. That is not bad news in the cyclical sense. Like, this isn't suggesting that we're seeing a clear recession.
So those are the recession indicators that have changed the past 6 months, the context, if you will. And that's all well and good, save for this fact. It's people who make this economy go round, people and businesses who have to figure out what decisions they are going to make based on what the indicators are. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman checked in with some business owners and consumers that he's been keeping up with lately to see what their personal recession gauges are telling them right now.
Here's an economic signal that doesn't sound anything like a recession's upon us or coming soon. New construction. Randy Delwo is a small business owner from Bend, Oregon, and when he travels for his company selling scientific instruments, he hears the same thing.
Almost every city I go, you see cranes and building and neighborhoods popping up all over. Overall, the economy, I think, is holding fairly steady.
Delwo is worried about the ongoing trade war. When I spoke to him back in August, he was losing export sales because of Chinese tariffs. I called him today with news of possible progress, and
we've seen this pattern for some time where there's supposedly progress on the trade war and then nothing happens, or maybe it escalates. We're trying to grow, but it's difficult to do with these headwinds of losing, a portion of your sales.
Tim Reynolds runs an Ohio software company that serves manufacturing customers.
We're having a good year.
Not quite as good as last year, but even with signs of a manufacturing slowdown nationwide, he's not worried.
What is slowing down is portrayed in catastrophic terms when it's a slowdown in growth, not necessarily a recession.
Consumers have been getting a little more positive about the economy. Sam Lundberg and his wife are government workers in New Mexico, and when I talked to him last spring, he was feeling nervous. Lately, though,
I've had a couple of minor pay bumps. We're starting to buy furniture, starting to talk to a realtor, look at houses, feeling okay about dropping money here and there for something we're going to be able to hold on to.
Of course, the economy could still fall apart and deliver up a recession next year. Just saying, it's the future, full of unknown unknowns. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
That thing Tara Sinclair was saying about having been off Twitter for 5 minutes and not being up to speed on trade policy in this country? Well, here's the latest. The Chinese have said both Washington and Beijing have agreed to roll back tariffs as part one of that phase one deal that's in the works. Reuters, however, reports that is not a universally shared view within the White House. So more to come on that one. Whatever the actual case may be, traders went with the more economically promising version. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. This has been a busier than usual couple of weeks for big name mergers and acquisitions. Xerox, we told you yesterday, wants to buy HP in a cash and stock deal. Last Friday, Google said it's buying Fitbit for $2.1 billion, all cash there. Before that, it was the luxury giant LVMH paying $14.5 billion cash for Tiffany. As Marketplace's Justin Ho reports, cash or stock or some combination thereof says a lot about the deal itself and where those companies think the broader economy might be headed.
It's a lot easier to buy a company with cash than it is with stock. No dilemmas about how to value your stock, no hand-wringing about whether your shares will drop before the deal closes. Matteo Arena at Marquette University says cash deals are also faster.
It's more likely to be approved by the shareholders of the target company more quickly.
Plus, companies have had a lot of cash on their balance sheets recently, thanks in part to the 2017 tax reform law. And with interest rates so low, it's cheap to borrow cash to buy companies. Arena says cash deals also make sense when the size of the acquiring company, like LVMH or Google, dwarfs the target company, like Tiffany or Fitbit.
Fitbit is about 0.1% the size of Google, so it's really a grain of sand.
Still, stock deals are making a comeback, especially when deals are big. United Technologies' $86 billion merger with Raytheon this summer was an all-stock deal. Stephen Davidoff Solomon at UC Berkeley says many companies like receiving stock as a payment because it can give them some say over the new combined company.
The target shareholders don't want to take the cash and go away. They want to keep stock in the combined entity.
Plus, many stock prices are at record highs, and that gives companies a lot of purchasing power now. Anil Shivdasani teaches about mergers and acquisitions at the University of North Carolina. He says stock deals can be a sign that some companies think their stocks are too high and want to take advantage of that quickly before the tide turns.
And so to some extent, that is a possible sign of caution.
Shivdasani says stock deals also help big companies avoid having to borrow huge sums of cash. That could impact their credit ratings and make them more vulnerable if an economic downturn arrives. In New York, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
There are some out there for whom what I'm about to say will resonate, and there are some out there for whom it will resonate in 20 or 30 years. Because even with Social Security and Medicare and retirement accounts of one sort or another, the road to 65 can be a bit bumpier than expected. That's the setup for today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Michelle Simons, and my husband and I live in Durham, North Carolina. I'm 58 years old and my husband is 59. I started working at the olive oil shop about 4.5 years ago. And before that, I mean, I taught cake decorating classes for a while. And I wanted to go and do something to, you know, bring in a little income. I knew I wasn't going to be able to make a semi-professional salary again. But because of my increasing knee problems, I couldn't continue working at the olive oil and vinegar shop. My husband was recently laid off. He was still eligible to work if he could find another job, which he finally was able to do. And that was wonderful. But, you know, it's the same company. And there's nothing to say that they can't just turn around and do the exact same thing 6 months, a year from now. We no longer are living under the illusion that there's any permanence with this. When we thought that he wasn't going to be employed and that there might be a big gap, we went down and had a long, drawn-out heart-to-heart with the financial planner. And, you know, we're too young to collect Social Security. We can't take advantage of Medicare yet. So we immediately started trimming the budget really hard. We cut out the entertainment right away. We canceled the cable TV, that kind of thing. We paid off the house, which is great, but we still have student loan debt from one of our children's education. Fortunately, we've only got maybe a year left on paying for one car. The other car is paid for. And one of the other things that we're doing is we have a walkout basement and we're converting a storage room to a efficiency apartment and hoping to rent it at least perhaps during the school year because there's two universities in Durham and we're hoping maybe we could find a grad student or something that would like a quiet place to live.
Michelle Simons in Durham, North Carolina. We have got to have your help to do this series, gang. Share the story of your economy with us, would you? You can do it at marketplace.org. Coming up,
we've got some images that had people in them. We've got cats wearing hats.
Computer-generated cats, people, and what your friendly neighborhood algorithm thinks they ought to look like. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 182 today, 0.6%, 27,674. The NASDAQ up 23 points, 0.2%, 8,334. The S&P 500 climbed 8 points, 0.2%, 3,085. I usually do this at the end, but here you go. Yield on the 10-year T-note jumped to 1.91% on reports that the trade deal may be a-happening. No, no. Here's more on that. Trade bellwethers rose. Heavy equipment maker Caterpillar gained 1%. Remember bellwethers? We did that a couple of weeks ago. Boeing up 1.4% today. Semiconductor firm Qualcomm advanced 6.3%. Ralph Lauren said demand for its polo shirts and jackets in Europe and China was strong, reported stronger than expected earnings. Shares thus up more than 14%. You're listening to Marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. This next item requires that you suspend your disbelief. The disbelief that's about to hit you when you realize it's a story about Black Friday. Yes, that Black Friday, more than 3 weeks away still. Nevertheless, retailers like Best Buy, Target, and Walmart are launching early Black Friday deals. So we got to pondering today how those companies decide which products to make their hot deals for the day after Thanksgiving. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra is on it.
First thing you need to know, the question we're asking, retailers don't really want you to know the answer. Joel Bynes is a managing director at Alex Partners.
Holiday merchandising is a highly strategic activity, so what's promoted and at what price and so forth are highly guarded secrets.
What we do know is that retailers go for two things. They've got the classics, the items you'd expect to see every year, the ones people wait until Black Friday to buy.
You know, it's cameras, it's Barbie playhouses, it's Instapots, laptops, cell phones.
And then they've got the trendy products, whatever they think is going to be hot this year, based on their own data and on what you all are talking about on social media. You'll see this in the toy category. Target's Black Friday deals include the 22-inch stuffed critter they call the Squishmallow Jumbo Unicorn for $25. And for $18, you can get the Baby Shark doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo dancing doll, which will provide endless fun until you chuck it out a window.
Even if you don't have kids, you have probably heard the song and gotten it stuck in your head.
Casey Runyon is managing editor at the website Brad's Deals.
Retailers want to have those things on their list. They want to have that eye-popping thing that, like, oh, I've seen that before.
These products are not necessarily supposed to make money. Jane Boyd Thomas teaches marketing at Winthrop University. She says retailers are willing to take a loss on this stuff because that gets people into the store and onto the website.
They'll come in and they'll buy the hugely discounted television, for example. But while they're there, they're going to buy some other items as well.
Ideally, some items with a higher profit margin. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
If you've been paying attention to the business and technology news lately, first of all, hi, thanks for being here. Second of all, you've almost certainly seen all the artificial intelligence stories, right? Algorithms that are going to take our jobs or revolutionize healthcare or moderate internet comments or disrupt just about any industry you can think of. Artificial intelligence, AI, is what Janelle Shane experiments with and writes about on her blog. It's called AI Weirdness. A new book about AI and all of its weirdness is called You Look Like a Thing, and I Love You. Janelle, thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I need you to tell me how you came up with the title of this book, because I kind of love that story.
Well, this was one of these experiments that seemed like a good idea until I started doing it. What I was doing was training a computer program to generate new pickup lines.
Like you go to a bar and try to pick somebody up pickup lines?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Okay. And, you know, it sounded like a good idea in theory until I started reading some of these pickup lines. And, oh, you know, they're cheesy or they're just, like, kind of slimy. They have these terrible puns. But The thing what I discovered when I trained this computer to try to imitate those pickup lines is all of that went completely over its head. It had no clue what any of that was supposed to be. And so the pickup lines it generated ended up being kind of sweet. And my very favorite one ended up being the title of the book.
You look like a thing and I love you. I kind of love
yeah.
that. And that's where you're going here with the basic premise of this book. Why and how AI is making the world a weirder place. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so this is looking at these algorithms that are all over the place. You know, they're already in our finances. They're already making decisions on, like, who gets a job, who gets a loan. It's giving them kind of real-world things that we're familiar with and they might not necessarily be, and kind of seeing where they succeed and where they fall flat on their faces because of this general lack of understanding they have.
Okay, so through the miracle of modern technology, we've set up a little demo here. We are not in the same studio, but I have shared my computer screen, and you're going to give me a little demo. What am I supposed to do now?
So there's two versions of this same algorithm, and the first version we're going to look at is one that does a pretty impressive job of generating human faces. And there's a nice demo of this at the URL thispersondoesnotexist.com.
All right, hang on a minute. I'm a slow typer. This person does not exist. Yeah, hang on. .com. Okay.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
All right. And there's a picture. Oh, it's a little. All right. So it's a picture of a guy. And it's a little skewed. It's a little messed up, but okay.
Yeah. So it's a reasonable person. And if you refresh it, you'll get another person.
All right. Wait, hang on. Sorry. So this is funny. I'm looking closer now.
Yeah.
The mouth is a little messed up. I think the eyes are totally different.
Yeah.
And there's like. There's like an ear out there somewhere.
Yeah, the ear is kind of okay. Floating, and then the background is kind of, you can't really tell what any of the objects are.
But basically, at a quick glance, this is a human face, right?
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Yeah. All right, hang on. Let me refresh this one. We'll see if we get another one.
Oh, yeah.
All right, this one's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
This one's much better. Much better.
Yeah.
Well, except for that bit of hair out on the side. But yeah.
Yeah, the teeth is another giveaway. So if you look at her teeth,
yeah.
You can kind of see her front two teeth are not her biggest two teeth as would be normal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's
so weird.
You've
got like a really huge fourth tooth and
yes,
some other
Ooh.
Tiny.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
But in general, like when these results were released, people were amazed. Like researchers
right.
were amazed.
Yeah.
And so this is my example of a algorithm that's been given a pretty narrow problem. So all it has to do are human faces
right.
facing forward at the camera, really tight crop. So basically chin to the very top of the head, and
yep.
you're not getting much other than that. But the next algorithm I want
okay.
to show you,
now, right.
this is the same group, same resources, and the URL is thiscatdoesnotexist.com.
Ooh, okay. Cat does – whoops. God, I'm such a bad typer. Okay, thiscatdoesnotexist.com. All right, well, so it's a cat head, but then a blobby kind of body. It's a little troubling, frankly.
Yeah, the body is a furry mass with a kind of lumps that are suggestive of maybe these are paws, kind of.
Yeah. All right, I'm doing another one. Hang on. Oh, my God. What is that?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. All right, that's terrible. Okay.
It has attempted to do a human, I think, in with the cat.
Oh, God. All right, that's
because
this is really hard. This is harder to look at than weird people.
So it thinks this is part of a cat, right, because it doesn't know.
That's so funny because there's like, there's a zillion cat pictures on the internet, and you'd think that an AI would be able to come up with something better than this.
Yeah, so it had a lot of training data as examples, and
right.
this was a really powerful algorithm.
Right.
But this time, like, there's a lot of variation in the cat pictures on the internet. So we're not just dealing with cat faces tightly cropped, but we have whole bodies to deal with.
Yeah.
We've got some images that had people in them. We've got cats wearing hats.
So, yeah. All right. So look, as troubling as these cats are, and to some degree as amusing as this experiment has been, let me throw it to the real world. At some point, reasonably soon, I imagine, we're going to have fleets of self-driving cars. I mean, yes, we've got them, but we'll have many, many more. And this is really amusing to sit here and look at cats and humans and all of that stuff. But talk to me about what happens when you have AI trying to, I don't know, drive down the 95 between Baltimore and Washington, D.C.
Yeah, so this is a really good illustration of how much AI struggles when it's problem gets just incrementally harder.
Right.
What is the really tough part and what self-driving car companies are struggling with right now to try to bring the cars finally to market is all of the weird stuff that happens, like the emus get loose or there's a costume
parade. Emus get loose. Yeah, no, I get it.
Yep. Emus are escape artists.
Yeah, no, I get it, right? The point being, it's the unpredictable stuff that's going to get you.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. It's this freak accidents that are going to be really, really hard to eliminate because, you know, we're talking about a narrow intelligence that's trying to deal with a really broad and unpredictable world. Some of these commercial applications we're hoping to have AI do for us really does require something more like an artificial general intelligence, more right. like this science fiction AI. And we're not going to have that anytime soon.
Janelle Shane is an author and a scientist. Her book is called You Look Like a Thing and I Love You. Janelle, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Totally fascinating.
Thanks. I really enjoyed talking with you.
We've got an excerpt from Janelle's book on our website, along with another dose of those AI-generated pickup lines and a video, should you so choose, of those somewhat disturbing cat pictures we were looking at. Marketplace.org is where you go. This final note on the way out today, in which a famed symbol of market capitalism might be on the move. The Wall Street Journal reports today that the city of New York is working on a plan to move that charging bull statue, now on Bowling Green in Lower Manhattan, somewhere closer to the New York Stock Exchange. It was originally an unwelcome middle-of-the-night surprise, literally, that bull was, placed by the sculptor in front of the Stock Exchange 30 years ago in the wee small hours of a December evening. The city didn't want it there, hauled it to a lot in Queens before negotiations put it in its current, well, for now, spot. All right, we got to go. Dow Industrials up 182 today, 0.6%. The NASDAQ, 23 points to the good, 0.2%. The S&P 500 climbed 8 points, 0.2% there as well. Amir Bibawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, and Heron Bikella are the Marketplace editing staff. Betsy Streisand is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.